Everybody, Mike Malloy here. It is 7 past the hour. Welcome to tonight's program. If you have forgotten, 9 years ago tonight, this is the way it sounded in the skies and in the ground over Baghdad. 9 years ago. Seems like just yesterday, huh? Shock and awe. Just part of it. If we had a 7-hour program, we would play the entire audio for you. We'll be back. I'm torn, shattered and tossed and torn. Too shocking to see. Too shocking to see. Now won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble, trouble, please be kind. I don't want no fight, and I haven't got a lot of. Could you make a more fucked up?
Radio Right. From the left, it's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Richard Bach. Thank you, Richard. His message? It's not a Bill Maher million dollar contribution to a super PAC, but this is doing my small part to keep the Malloy Show on the air. This is also in remembrance of my mother, Jane, who at a young age, 55, lost her fight to cancer 7 years ago. I miss you, Mom. P.S. Been an avid listener since Nova M days and a day one podcast subscriber. Richard Bach on the left coast. Thank you, Richard. Appreciate it very much. Richard, by the way, has sponsored the entire evening. And also thanks to Irish Dave. He knows why. Shock and awe, 9 years ago, we now begin our 10th year of military occupation of Baghdad. We're in our 11th year of military occupation of Afghanistan. And the killing continues in both countries. The awfulness of this, of course, is lost in fact. But nobody remembers this. I watched a couple of nightly newscasts tonight. Nothing. No mention. The instructions from on high. Oh, Jesus, don't raise that issue again. So. But we'll continue to do that. I guess for as long as I'm on the air, if I'm still doing this program 5 years from now on March 19th, we will broadcast a brief 10 minutes of what it sounded like in Baghdad that night. Email. Mike, I wanted to drop you a note on this horrible anniversary to hopefully add a positive note. On this day in 2003, I found you. But the reason I found you was quite the opposite of what I was looking for. That needs a little explanation. I'm 50 now, raised in a Republican household. My political awareness, like most people my age, started with the transition of Carter, the worst president in U.S. history, according to my father, to the glorious day of Ronald Reagan's anointing as the god of the Republican Party. I was a new right-wing newbie. Progressed to the early 90s in the George Herbert Walker Bush presidency. A like-minded neighbor turned me on to this guy on the radio named Rush. So I started listening. Rush was funny. Trash liberals and made fun of women as feminazis, the homeless as dumpster divers, and other fun hate-mongering. Ha-ha, it was a good old time. Like a drug, I was hooked. I began to see everything political from his perspective. Stayed that way through the Clinton blue dress and the Clinton impeachment. Oh, those were the glory days for old Rushbo. I remember seeing 9/11 on TV and thinking, oh my God, what will Rush say? I stayed on the Dittohead team. On to Afghanistan. On to Iraq. Go, Rush, go. Killing it for the USA. So on this anniversary, 9 years ago at work, out of a right-wing perversity in my mind, I wanted to hear the other side whine. I wonder what the liberal radio talkers were saying about this. It would be good to listen. For a laugh. Of course, I couldn't find any liberal talk on local radio. Go figure. So doing a quick Google search, I found this radio station, UAW's IE America. United Auto Workers? Unions? Well, according to my Rush brain, it sure sounded liberal to me. You were doing a 3-hour show. Tom Hartman and Peter Werby were on, too. I listened to you, then I went and listened to Rush, then more of you and some more Rush, some Peter Werby and some more Rush, some Tom Hartman and some Rush. Took about a week or two, and then it happened. You and the liberals are telling me not to believe what they were saying. The liberals told their listeners, and you still do, to go look it up. Read, research what you were saying. Think for yourself. Figure it out. Seek the truth. Wow. Radio hosts not telling me what to think, but radio show hosts telling me to think? I thought, I can do that. And I did. Well, it's been 9 years. When you say right-wingers are listening to your show, I think of the days back in March of 2003 and how I slowly opened my eyes and woke up. I'm confident you are the alarm bell for many other current ditto heads, like I was, that are hearing the alarm and opening their eyes. So as horrible as this anniversary is, it gives me hope that others may, on a whim, try to listen to you. If they do, I know some of them, like me, will begin to think on their own and begin the process of evolving back into humans. Keep truth seeking. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Peace. Andy S. Kind letter, Andy S. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. All right, we have a break coming up here. When we come back after this break, we're going to play for you a series of comments made by Rumsfeld, Ari Fleischer, George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell. And I want you to hear, does anybody give a damn that we're responsible for up to 2 million deaths and deformed children and blood and disaster in Mesopotamia? Does anybody care? So long ago, it's 9 years ago, for Christ's sake, let the dead rest, right, Mike? I mean, just forget about it. We have to have historical amnesia in this country, or we'll all go insane.
The time has come to clear the smog out of my eyes. Our money trained the madmen. Our leaders gave them cash. They thought they could exploit them for their subterranean stash. When rulers kill their people, our leaders say, it's of no concern to us. As long as we get our hands on that greasy, slimy stuff.
The flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
Who made me judge and jury?
Well, trying to anyway. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Richard Bach in California. His message, the whole night is, as a matter of fact, his message is not a Bill Maher $1 million contribution to a super PAC, but this is doing my small part to keep the Malloy Show on the air. This is also in remembrance of my mother, Jane, who at a young age of 55 lost her fight to cancer 7 years ago. I miss you, Mom. P.S. Been an avid listener since Nova M days and a day one podcast subscriber. Richard in California. Thank you, Richard, very much. The roughly 10-minute audio of Shock and Awe, it actually went on for about 6 or 7 hours. You have to access whatever you can pick up through YouTube, through Al Jazeera. This is down the memory hole here. Prairie 2 writes, you total mood wrecker. We didn't need to hear that. Get with the program. The Evening News, the one owned by the CIA, did a long piece on the 100th anniversary of the Japanese cherry trees in D.C. Much more pleasant. Oh, wait. The focus was on how they're blooming earlier every year. End of the world with a whimper instead of shock and awe. Oh, never mind. From Bruce. So, this is a piece Kathy put together a number of years ago. Just kick back and listen.
4 years ago, UN inspectors concluded that Iraq had failed to amount for large stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons. In last month's declaration, Iraq again failed to account for those weapons.
Biological weapons, with respect to chemical weapons, we know they not only have had them, but that they've used them.
The real threat to peace is Saddam Hussein and his possession of weapons of mass destruction.
Saddam Hussein has got weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein is a threat to America.
We're resting our case on the fact that Saddam Hussein has developed weapons of mass destruction, has them in his possession.
We just discovered undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
What happened to the 26,000 liters of anthrax? What happened to the botulin? What happened to the 1.5, 1.5 tons of VX? What happened to the sarin? Proof that he is not disarmed.
I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. I believe he's a threat to the neighborhood in which he lives. And I've got good evidence to believe that.
The declaration that he made is proof positive that he has withheld information about his weapons of mass destruction program.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
It's because Iraq possesses weapons of mass destruction, and that is the core of the issue.
We're threatened by the spread of chemical and biological and nuclear weapons. Every free nation is a potential target.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view, that Saddam Hussein must disarm.
Saddam Hussein must disarm himself of all weapons of mass destruction.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming. He is a danger to the world.
We know what a disarmed country looks like. And Iraq doesn't look like that.
Secretary of State Powell will present information and intelligence about Iraq's illegal weapons programs.
My colleagues, every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources. These are not assertions. What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence. There can be no doubt that Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more. And he has the ability to dispense these lethal poisons and diseases in ways that can cause massive death and destruction. Most of the launchers and warheads had been hidden in large groves of palm trees. This is evidence, not conjecture. This is true. This is all well documented.
Our intelligence sources tell us that he has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes suitable for nuclear weapons production.
But we do have evidence that they have had a nuclear program that was robust.
Saddam Hussein is determined to get his hands on a nuclear bomb. He's made repeated covert attempts to acquire high-specification aluminum tubes.
Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
With respect to the uranium, it was the information that we had. We provided it. If that information is inaccurate, fine. We're continuing to examine this issue.
We have never rested our case on nuclear weapons programs in Iraq on this issue about some uranium from Niger.
After Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
Secretary Powell described to the United Nations, we have found the bio truck. That's proof perfect that the intelligence in that regard was right on target. I can't discuss all intelligence information. And of course, we have already had the successes in finding the bio trucks.
Leaving Saddam Hussein in possession of weapons of mass destruction for a few more months or years is not an option.
The United States will lead a coalition of the willing to disarm the Iraqi regime of weapons of mass destruction.
War is the only option to protect the American people in the region and the world from Saddam Hussein, who is not disarmed.
Iraq will be disarmed.
There's a smoking gun, and it involves weapons of mass destruction. They're within 15 minutes of having a nuclear weapon.
We don't know to what extent there may or may not be weapons of mass destruction used. We don't know exactly how long it would take to find weapons of mass destruction and destroy them. There's so many variables that the numbers of possible point answers create a range that simply isn't useful. It's simply not knowable.
I am pleased with the progress that we're making in the early stages
of the war to rid Iraq of its weapons of mass destruction.
This is a war to go after one regime led by Saddam Hussein that possesses weapons of mass destruction that can take the lives of millions.
We've destroyed the base of a terrorist group in northern Iraq that sought to attack America and Europe with deadly poisons. 1 month ago, that country was an arsenal of weapons. Today, the world is safer. Taking every action we can to prevent the Iraqi regime from using its hidden weapons of mass destruction, to prevent the launch of missiles and chemical or biological weapons. Terrorists will no longer have a source of weapons of mass destruction in the regime that used to be in Iraq, because the regime that used to be in Iraq is no longer.
I think it is something that will be found. We've always said that we have information that they have weapons of mass destruction. What we have is intelligence about their having it. Whether it was specific location or not is often not the case.
And there is not a doubt but that we will, over a period of time, find people who can tell us where to go look for those things.
We have high confidence that Iraq did indeed have weapons of mass destruction, and nothing has changed our confidence that they will be found. We have high confidence that they have weapons of mass destruction. That is what this war was about and is about.
It obviously is important to find them. Those capabilities, chemical and biological weapons, and it's hard to find them if they're buried under rubble. We don't know. We've got a good group of people, this interagency group, CIA, FBI, DOD, DIA, working out there, and they're collecting things, they're looking for things. You'll be told if we do find something. So, in good time.
We are not a third-rate intelligence agency. There was nothing doctored in those tapes or in anything else we presented.
I believe that the presentation made by Secretary Powell was accurate and will be proved to be accurate.
Already we are seeing important progress in Iraq. Oil, Iraqi oil, is flowing again.
It does not relate to oil. I mean, it just plain doesn't. The vast majority of Iraq's oil fields were not burned. And the country's oil wealth has been preserved.
One, the entire notion is nothing but nonsense. It's the stuff of conspiracy theories, and I don't deal in that. We do indeed have concerns about a country that is awash in gas and oil.
One of the big concerns early on was the southern oil fields. I had frequently talked about the southern oil fields, or oil fields in general, and at least in the south, they are secure. And that is positive news for all of us.
I certainly had nothing to do with providing any chemicals or biologicals or any kind of weapons to Iraq.
I had nothing to do with helping Saddam Hussein and his regime against Iran.
Nonsense. It has nothing to do with oil. Literally nothing to do with oil.
Yeah. Remember? It went on for years. And what is the big issue in the Republican primary this year? A woman's right to birth control. Just astonishing.
Ignorance, security, and mind. I'm all alone.
loud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, he coughed into the microphone. Oh, was the mic off? This time last year, the pollen count in Atlanta was 130. Today it was approaching 6,000. This hour is being sponsored by Richard Bach. He writes, this is not a Bill Maher million-dollar contribution to a super PAC, but this is doing my small part to keep Mike Malloy on the air. This is also in remembrance of my mother, Jane, who at a young age of 55 lost her fight to cancer 7 years ago today. I miss you, Mom. P.S. Been an avid listener since Nova M days and a Day One podcast subscriber, Richard in L.A. Richard, thank you very much. Richard is also the sponsor of the next 2 hours tonight, and we appreciate that a lot. Okay, where are we? Oh, yeah. I have people email me occasionally and say, why do you play that bombing thing? It just doesn't make any sense over the radio. You know, okay, it didn't really make any sense either when we did it. But to me, that was an example of the murderous fascists that were represented by the Bush-Cheney operation. And keep in mind, this was a not elected president who ordered this. This is when the United States made the turn into a dead end, at the end of which you will find the corpses of so many empires, fascist regimes, nations that eventually imploded, collapsed, died. The sergeant who is under investigation for the murder of 16 women and children and the attempt to burn their bodies, allegedly, is an example of the madness that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney produced on this side. And if you listen to that first segment of the program tonight, the shock and awe example of the death and destruction that the Bush-Cheney regime produced on the other side, in Iraq, death and destruction that continues today on a daily basis. And if you listen to that piece of the that Kathy put together of all the different sound bites from these lying sons of bitches who did this, every single one of them, they're all living very honorable lives now, aren't they? Except, of course, Dick Cheney doesn't go to Canada because it's not safe, he says. Ari Fleischer is a consultant on what? MSNBC or someplace? I see his mocking death's head of a face every once in a while on television. Rumsfeld, what's he doing? Has he choked to death yet on the profit he made from selling chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein? And when he stands there and says, I never did anything like that, and there is photographic and documented proof of him doing just that. These people didn't give a goddamn. Colin Powell, what happened to him? What's he doing now, huh? Colin Powell is the only one who tried to cop a plea of, hey, I didn't know what they were telling me and I didn't agree anyway. But all those people, all those years that lied this country into war crimes, and there's no way to avoid this. I mean, the rest of the world condemned the German people and the Japanese people and to a lesser degree the Italian people for decades after World War II. And when somebody condemns the actions of the United States after violating the Nuremberg agreements, Nuremberg conclusions, they're immediately shouted down, what are you, un-American? Leave the country! Who the hell are you? Right? So the way we handle that in this country with the full cooperation of our corporate media is we just forget. The main function of people like Brian Williams and Diane Sawyer and whoever's at CBS, Scott Pelley, their main function is the same as Winston Smith's, only they do it with a lot more panache and they dress better And they're paid much more, of course. But their function is to flush this stuff down the memory hole and focus on the really important stuff, like Mitt Romney just won in a landslide in Puerto Rico. And another preacher for Santorum screamed his guts out about how much he hates all the gods except his. And, of course, after the Sunday and after the service, Rick Santorum stood out there with his dung-eating grin on his face like a good Republican. Yeah, well, you know, I've always made my case. So that's what the Winston Smiths of commercial television focus on. This is the 9th anniversary of Shock and Awe, if anniversary is the right word. And not supposed to think about it, not supposed to remember it. Look over here. Look at these shiny things I'm holding up over here. The price of gasoline. Do you know it's probably going to be $5 and it's all Barack Obama's fault? Ooh. And, oh, did you hear the Supreme Court? They're going to be hearing a case about Affordable Care Act, or as we Republicans call it, Obamacare. No, we call it Obama-Romney-care. Now we real hardcore Republicans, because we don't like Romney. We know he's just a stalking horse for who? Obama, I guess. Shock and Awe? What the hell are you talking about? Shock and Awe? Wasn't that a backfield for the Indianapolis? Shock and Awe? I don't know. That had to be some sports reference. Richard in Los Angeles, his message, it's not a Bill Maher million dollar contribution to a super PAC, but this is doing my small part to keep the Mike Malloy Show on the air. This is also in remembrance of my mother, Jane, who at a young age of 55 lost her fight to cancer 7 years ago today. I miss you, Mom. P.S. Been an avid listener since Nova M days and a day one podcast subscriber. Richard in Los Angeles. Thank you, Richard. From John in Fargo. Mike, when you're talking about this anniversary of this U.S.-led bloodbath against Iraq and Afghanistan, all under the guise of the war on terror, and posed the question, if anyone cares to remember, well, to this day, I'm just as angered of all the unwarranted lost innocent lives and lost to savagery, torture, daily bombings, humiliation, all in the name of Bush-Cheney war on terror. With us or against us. I guess we should have bombed Canada and Mexico, too, since they were against the war against Iraq. Aside from the sheer complacency of our public here, that one minute it's about Lindsay Lohan, Sarah Palin, reality TV, and no real truths of what our country has done. If anything, we have created many more terrorists in Iraq, Afghanistan, and probably many more countries that were, at the very least, if not friendly, at least showed no hostility toward America. From seeing the horrific images of the surviving children, the ongoing bombing since we created a bigger post-Saddam mess than ever with the infighting between the various factions, I can recall the night the Bush regime gave his little speech. As I was at a bar in Minnesota, this is the night before the bombing, we're just sickened, and nobody then cared either. Cheerleaders for the regime all across the land. Sad. One of the worst things to see are the war criminals, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Tenet, Rice, Fleischer, the neocons and company, walking around, putting their so-called expertise hats on shows, offering their opinions about foreign policy to current administration officials, becoming talking heads, going on book tours. And if that isn't enough, why not throw in the war against the U.S. South Coast after Katrina? It maddens me to the nth degree that President Obama, Speaker Pelosi at the time, said there would be no investigation, just to look forward. Let's be positive. So what about the lies that are all out there on tape, on digital recordings for a slam dunk prosecution of these terrorists, our homegrown ones? They make the Oklahoma City bombers McVeigh and Nichols look like common lawbreakers, like a speeding ticket. Well, not really. But the Bush-Cheney regime had the power and the calls to create this. If Obama really wants to look like he and Holder believe in justice, then show some to the world. Iraq, Afghanistan, hold these bastards accountable. Show the soldiers how they were lied into their deaths and dismemberments across the seas and in the deserts. Mike, I'm glad you're covering this. And the media? Of course, next stop, Iran. Keep it lit, John Fargo. The sergeant who is now being held in the military prison before he goes on trial for the murder of 16 sleeping children and women in Afghanistan, not to excuse anything, not to judge anything, just asking a question. Just asking a question, okay? Is this sergeant, in our little theory world here, just a question, this is a parallel dimension to what's really real here. Is the sergeant more or less guilty or equally guilty than Bush and Cheney, who ordered, and Rumsfeld and the rest of them, who co-conspired to order the killings of hundreds of thousands, or according to The Lancet, the British medical journal, 1.5 million people? Was it Stalin or somebody said that what's the quote? Damn it. One death is a crime. A million deaths is, what was it? Oh, Jesus. An historical event or something? Somebody, Michael in Roswell, please send me the quote. I should have had it in front of me. But I think about the four Marines shown urinating on the corpses of the Afghan men. I think about the atrocities in Haditha, Iraq. I think about Fallujah, where the town was sealed off and white phosphorus was dumped to burn people alive. These are things we did. This is stuff we did. And I don't know. Here it is. Thank you, Michael. One death is a tragedy. A million deaths is a statistic. That's it. I have a great research department. One death is a tragedy. A million deaths is a statistic. So the 16 deaths that so far are being laid at the trigger finger of the sergeant is a tragedy. And the 1.5 million deaths perpetrated by the U.S. in Iraq is a statistic. I don't know. I realize that, you got to focus on getting up and going to work in the morning if you have a job and taking care of your kids. I never sit down with my 7-year-old and talk about the atrocities that we've committed just in the course of her lifetime. You know, what's the point, really? You know? Don't talk to my grandkids about it either. We just bury it. You know, well, it was all justified. But the Iraq invasion and Megadeth and occupation, how in the hell do we justify that? How do we do that? We don't think about it. And our media don't report on it. And nobody says anything anymore. And just like John Fargo pointed out, the perpetrators just skip around the country making money off their books and their lies and their professorships and so on and so forth. And John Yoo, the flunky who wrote the torture memos that allowed Dick Cheney to get whatever kind of pleasure he got out of looking at those torture videos, is a professor. Is he still a professor at Berkeley? I don't know. Has he been run out of town yet? No, of course not. Of course not. You know what the equivalent would be? The equivalent would be, and I'm going to pick this particular guy from the Nazi high command in particular because he bailed out early and spent the rest of eternity in prison, but Rudolf Hess, one of the architects of the Third Reich. He wound up in a British prison and then a German prison. Spandau? Was it Spandau? Where did he wind up? Michael? I know it was Spandau prison. But the people who engineered the mega death in Iraq, Americans, they skip around the country and make money. Now, if you want to focus on the price of gasoline, go ahead. If you want to focus on those dirty goddamn liberals who want women to have the right of privacy in their physician's office, go ahead. If you want to focus on, why should we have to pay for birth control so other people can screw? Go ahead. But I want to tell you something, Mr. Believer, Mr. Religious Person, Mr. Right Winger. There is a blade hanging over your head that eventually is going to be released. Metaphorically speaking, for you dumbass right wingers. And when it comes down, when this karmic blow falls, if you believe this stuff. I mean, there's no point believing this. It's just me talking. But when this blade comes down, it's going to be quick. And it'll probably be just.
Now I ain't no fan of Saddam Hussein. Oh, please don't get me wrong. If it's free.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
We were young together. We were on the ball. We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the run.
21 past the hour. The killing of Trayvon Martin in Sanford, Florida, outside Sanford, Florida, is another American tragedy that is, on the one hand, easy to understand. And by that, I don't mean to diminish or minimize his murder. His parents are calling on the FBI now to get involved in the investigation. George Zimmerman, the 28-year-old neighborhood watch volunteer who murdered this boy, allegedly, remains free. His father is defending him, saying he was not a racist and didn't provoke the altercation that led to the shooting. And this is a kid that had a bag of Skittles and, I think, a drink in his hand. And the horror of this for people listening, not for the parents, the horror for the parents is the loss of their children, their child. But the horror is listening to the 911 tapes, the woman who called. And you can hear in the background this boy screaming and pleading, and then the gunshot. And then the woman who made the 911 call saying, at the same time she's telling her husband to get away from the door, get away from the window, you can hear her tell the 911 operator, I think he's dead. My best friend for a number of years, I mentioned this before, there's a guy here in Atlanta named Steve Smith who was a stand-up comic, among other things. Black guy. And we used to have, we spent a lot of time together over about a 7 or 8 year period until he died. He died from needle sharing 10 years earlier when he was homeless, living on the subways in New York, and sharing drugs with the same needle with people who were infected with AIDS. Steve finally developed AIDS and died. He was an Air Force veteran from Vietnam era, and a good guy, father, married. But Steve and I used to have some pretty upfront conversations. It was very, very good. A white man, a black man, sitting down, both of us about the same age, sitting down, really talking about the issues. And we got close enough that we could drop whatever pretense that exists between white friends and black friends. If you're black and have a white friend, you might have a black friend. You know, either it's a real close, no holds barred friendship, or it isn't. And I had very few of those in my life, maybe two or three, with people of other races. But I damn sure had it with Steve. And in the course of those conversations, he told me things. And he told me things from a purely African-American perspective, things that I never even considered, or things I thought I knew. And he used to point out to me, you know, he'd say, Malloy, you know, you're white. You think you know these things. You know, you're the dominant culture. You're the man. But let me tell you what it is from over here. And we had long conversations. It may have been times when we were both unemployed, I don't know, but we used to have long conversations. I drank more damn Diet Pepsi with him than and I hate that stuff. But he'd show up with a six-pack of Diet Pepsi. Whew. And he told me about what it's like to be a young black boy in this country. And if you have a father, what your father tells you, or what your grandmother tells you, or what your mother tells you. Kind of like Bruce Springsteen's 41 Shots, American, what is it, American Skin. A couple of lines in there, don't ever run. You know, if the police stop you, don't move. And he used to tell me, Steve used to tell me, you don't understand. White people cannot understand. But when you're a young black male and you leave your house in the morning, your mother, your grandmother, your father genuinely do not know that they're going to see you return that evening. And it took me a while to finally process that years ago. Steve died about 18 years ago. But I thought about those conversations he and I had when the horror of this boy being shot dead hit the news.
Through the night, you're kneeling over his body in the vestibule, praying for his life. When is it a good?
If you're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, let me get, I want to mention the program tonight, including this hour, is being sponsored by Richard Bach. His message, it's not a Bill Maher $1 million contribution to a super PAC, but this is doing my small part to keep the Mike Malloy Show on the air. This is also in remembrance of my mother, Jane, who at a young age of 55 lost her fight to cancer 7 years ago today. And I miss you, Mom. P.S. I've been an avid listener since Nova M days and a day one podcast subscriber. Thank you, Richard. Richard in L.A. The murder of Trayvon Martin is a result of being black in America. There's just no way to get around that. And in the state of Florida now, there is a law on the books, or the same, a similar law is here. And the law says simply that if you feel threatened, you have a right to murder somebody. Of course, murder is a legal term, so let me rephrase it. If you feel threatened, you have a right to kill somebody. And it doesn't make any difference. I guess it could be argued in court how serious or severe the threat was and what the threat consisted of. Because if I have a stick in my hand, an 8-inch stick, and I say, I'm going to poke your eye out, can you shoot me dead? Maybe. Which, as other people have said now, puts every black man in America at risk, even greater than he was yesterday, or before these laws were signed. These crazy goddamn right-wing laws that are going in the books. Women can't have birth control, and men, black men, better watch out when they're just walking down the street with a bag of Skittles in their hand. I mean, this is astonishing. And the police, reverse it. Supposing this young man would have shot an unarmed, whatever you want to call Zimmerman. His father says he's Hispanic. Supposing this young black kid would have killed an Hispanic or a white under the same circumstances, where the young black man was a volunteer neighborhood. We have him around here in the area that I live. And some of these neighborhood patrols, that I'm aware of here, but some of them are staffed with right-wingers who are fully armed and just waiting for a chance to blow somebody away. This is how they prove their manhood. But the laws now that are going on the books by these gun crazy sons of bitches, these people who are just out of their minds with this gun stuff, they are putting innocent people at risk, yes, but young black Americans at risk of their lives. Now, I'm sure I'm going to get some emails from black folk who say, you know, don't be making our case for us. You're Caucasian. You don't know what you're talking about. And to a large extent, you're absolutely right. That's why I told you the story of Steve Smith, the guy who educated me when I thought I didn't need any more education. Hell, I was in my 40s. I didn't need education. Yeah, I did. Every white person in America needs some education about this issue. You think you know? You think you know what you know? You don't know what you don't know. Oh, my God, it sounds like Rumsfeld. But you don't. If you're Caucasian, you don't know what you don't know. You have no idea. Have you got a black friend? Huh? If you got a friend, a man or woman, couple, whatever, people that you socialize with, people you hang out with, maybe you get drunk with occasionally, you party with, maybe you go to church with. Do you have somebody like that? A mix, you know, the race different from you? But especially if you're white. You know, black folks have been studying white folks for 350 years in this country. And let me give you a newsflash. And I've said this before on this program. Let me give you a newsflash, my white brothers and sisters. Black folk know you. They know everything about you. You don't believe that, do you? You just don't believe that. They know everything about you. And white people, on the other hand, with very few exceptions, know nothing about black folk. Absolutely nothing. You think you do. And most white people say, well, you know, man, Condoleezza Rice, Barack Obama. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Nuh-uh. And until white people admit in this country, see, this is, I'm not going to go too far at this because this is a waste of time. This is an absolute waste of time. This is the issue. This is the issue in this country. I mean, when you get beyond the other issues, like we're killing the planet and we're killing Iraqis and blah, 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 blah. But the issue here, this is it. This is it right here. This is it. This is it. This inability to understand black and white. You can add in other racial groups too, but the essential misunderstanding here is black and white. Misunderstanding for the most part on one side. Now, I'm not defending anybody or anybody's behavior. There are punks and thugs. I don't care what color you are or what your heritage, your nationality. There are punks and thugs all over the place. I'm just talking about the general attitude of how Caucasians don't have a clue. You know, I get the Atlanta news, and there's a television news at night and in the morning. There's a channel here, Channel 2. It's owned by Cox Communication. I used to work for him, not the TV, but the radio side. And watching Channel 2 news in the city is like watching a police blotter. It's the most disgusting thing. So why do you watch it, Malloy? I have no idea. They got the best weather reporting on Earth, but it's just story after story. And you know what always happens? I don't know if you see this. Maybe you don't. If you live in the South, maybe you do. But every morning you turn on the news and another young black person has been shot dead someplace. And it could be a kid, a teenager, somebody in their 20s. I'm amazed sometimes at how few white people get shot dead here. And when they do, then we have a great big-ass murder trial here like we had with this daycare shooting where a man was having an affair with another man's wife and decided to kill whatever. Then it's on all the time. But black folk here in Atlanta, when they get shot down, I'll tell you what happens. There is a report on Channel 2 or sometimes the other network affiliates. And they give you kind of the bare bones. Police say they have no idea why James Jones was shot dead. Police are investigating. And then they get the tip line number. And then the next newscast, the next news cycle, the parents, usually the mother or the grandmother of this now dead young black guy, will stand there on camera. And she may cry a little bit, and she'll say, well, you know, he has a daughter, she's 2, and he had a fiance, and he was a good boy, you know, everybody in the neighborhood liked him, and that's it. And in a lot of these cases, what I see on the faces of these parents or grandparents who are standing there talking to the reporter, what I see on their faces, maybe I'm just reading in here, but what I see is just kind of a, I knew this was going to happen kind of look. Now, I'm not saying all these black guys are shot dead by whites. Obviously not. Shot dead by another black person. But that doesn't mean anything. Black life, we spent 350 years in this country putting zero value on black life. And that percolates through the culture. You know, you hear, and Caucasians don't get this, they hear a lot of black people calling each other the N-word. And, of course, white people jump up right now and say, well, if you can do it, why can't I? Well, there's a million reasons why you can't, fool. But a lot of that, black men using the N-word on each other, is not about comradeship. A lot of that is serious put-downs with the one epithet that they know is disabling. Because white people taught them that.
She asked for a blessing, but asked for no more. And the choir kept singing of freedom. On Birmingham Sunday, a noise shook the ground.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Richard Bach. The whole night is. Richard, thank you. His message, it's not a Bill Maher million-dollar contribution to a super PAC, but this is doing my small part to keep your program on the air. This is also in remembrance of my mother, Jane, who at a young age of 55 lost her fight to cancer 7 years ago today. I miss you, Mom. P.S. Been an avid listener since Nova M days and a day one podcast subscriber. Thank you, Richard, on several levels there. Thanks for the sponsorship. Andre writes that law, not Andre, what I'm saying. It's a law that was passed in Florida in 2005 called the, I love this, Stand Your Ground Law. And as Michael in Roswell writes, the Stand Your Ground Law makes it virtually impossible to prosecute someone for homicide if they can claim they were in imminent harm, which is why the shooter in this case claimed that he saw Martin reach into the waistband of his pants as if he were reaching for a weapon. The law even states that if a person is acquitted under the law, the state must pay for all of the defense costs. Isn't that nice? How about that? And as Michael points out, you remember the comments from Neil Bortz a while back, you know, right-wing racist talk show host based in Atlanta on that very same channel, too, I was talking about, only it's on the radio side. Neil Bortz a while back was talking about, quote, needing more dead thugs on the streets of Atlanta. That's the attitude in a nutshell. Got your pants down around your knees, you're a thug. Bortz went on to say further that the dead thugs' mothers ought to be imprisoned as well. I mean, this... Let's see, I know Neil, or I did. I haven't spent any time around this miserable bastard in 20 years. But in my opinion, he is a full-blown racist. There is no question, none in my mind, about Neil Bortz. But that's true with all these right-wingers. But Andre makes an interesting comparison that what happened to this latest young black man in Florida is not dissimilar to our foreign policy, at least under Bush and Cheney, to attack countries that we think have nuclear weapons or that threatens our national security. So the line from the death of Trayvon Martin and the senselessness of it and the circumstances under which it occurred, if you listen to those recorded 911 tapes, you hear the police warning Zimmerman away. We don't need you to follow him. And then, of course, you also hear the comments from this guy named Zimmerman, who was absolutely certain that this kid was a threat. Just like Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and this poor, miserable George Bush. Just absolutely certain. You heard, you, if you were listening earlier, you heard the lies that went on and on and on. I wonder if O.J. Simpson ever found the killer of his wife and her friend. Remember, he said he was going to look and look and look. And I wonder if Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush and Rice and Colin Powell ever find those, ever found those magical, mystical WMDs that Iraq surely had. Maybe Iraq had them in their waistband or in that bag of Skittles. They have Skittles in Iraq? So, you know, how do you not draw a similarity, a macro and a micro here, of attacking countries based on lies? I don't believe that there was a real perception on the part of the Bush administration that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. I just don't believe that. What they had, what the country had, was oil. But that was the perception that was sold to the majority of the American people. They have them. I just can't see them. They're going to use them on us. We have to attack first. And just like Zimmerman, who went after this young kid. No, I don't. He's got something in his waistband. I know these types. I know what they do. I'm going to follow him. No, we don't need you to do that, sir. And then you hear the gunshots and the screams before you hear the gunshot, or shot, I should say. I don't know. So what is the difference? One death is a tragedy. A million deaths is a statistic. I guess that's it, right? I guess that's it. The invasion of Iraq and the occupation and the murder of hundreds of thousands of innocent people is just, you know. And the murder of this young guy down in Florida, well, I guess that's a tragedy, right? Stick around. Third hour coming up. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Yeah, still froggy. My voice, that is. Sorry about that. I wish somebody would come up with some medicine that... real medicine. Just make bronchitis go away. this hour, as the previous two, thank you, Richard, is being sponsored by Richard Bach. Isn't he the guy that wrote Seagull? Jonathan Livingston Seagull? Richard Bach in Los Angeles. I wonder if it's the same guy. Anyway, his message, it's the same. This is not a million multi... This is not... Okay, let's start over. This is not a Bill Maher million-dollar contribution to a super PAC, but this is doing my small part to keep the Mike Malloy Show on the air. This is also a reminder of my mother, Jane, who at a young age of 55 lost her fight to cancer 7 years ago. I miss you, Mom. P.S. Been an avid listener since Nova M days and a day one podcast subscriber. Richard Bach. Thanks, Richard. Thank you very much. Again, thanks for the whole night there, pal. Women's health is, of course, the one of the major focuses right now. For some reason, and I'm not sure what it is. I know it has its roots in biblical torture and insanity, but the focus in the Republican Party has been on destroying a woman's right to privacy, not just in case she chooses to terminate a pregnancy, in the privacy of her physician's office. What did I read the other day? Go to your doctor's office, man or woman, go to your doctor's office, sit down with him or her, discuss your medical condition, and your doctor listens, and then she says, okay, well, here's A, B, and C, and you sit there and ponder, and then she says, now there's D and E, and you think about that. And she said, now I'm going to prescribe, and then there's a knock on the door of the, the consultation room, examining room, knock on the door. So your doctor gets up and opens the door, and in walks this guy with a briefcase and a coat and tie on, I guess. And he sits down. He says, hi, I'm from the state legislature. Now, what's going on in here? At what point would you, pick up the nearest three-legged stool and smack him upside his head? Malloy advocates smacking state legislatures with a stool! That's what the Republicans are doing. Now, if you're not a woman, supposing, you're sitting there and you have prostate problems. Nah, that's not even that, although it might be connected to erectile dysfunction. But you're a man, you're going in and, you're having a very private conversation with your physician. And you're explaining to your doctor, in this case, you probably picked a man, and you're saying to him, well, doc, I just can't, it just won't stick. The doctor says, how long has this been going on? And he says, actually, ever since I started listening to Rush Limbaugh. But why don't you stop listening? Oh, I can't. I can't. I have to. I'm a real American. Okay, well, aside from that, Mr. Patient, you can't get it. Yeah, no, I can't. It won't stay. All right. And then he takes a little history, the doctor does, and then there's a knock on the door. The guy walks in and says, hi. He's got a briefcase and coat and tie, maybe. I don't know. He walks in and says, hi, I'm from the state legislature. Now what's going on here? Huh? No? Won't work that way. Will it, you dumbasses? Huh? Won't work that way. Email from Christine in West Hollywood. Mike, in regards to why the Republicans have been targeting women, contraception, abortion, etc., I've yet to hear on any progressive radio program anyone correlating these attacks with point number 5 on Lawrence Britt's 14 points of fascism. Here it is. Rampant sexism. Now, if you're not familiar with this, you can find it, it may be at my website, but it's Lawrence Britt, 14 points of fascism. How you can tell when your country truly... your society is truly going fascist. And these are historically accurate as surely as some guy sitting in an office telling his doctor he's got erectile dysfunction. I mean, here we go. The number 5 is rampant sexism. The government of fascist nations tends to be almost exclusively male-dominated. Under fascist regimes, traditional gender roles are made more rigid. Opposition to abortion is high, as is homophobia, and anti-gay legislation and national policy. Now, that's a short version. But as Christine goes on, that, coupled with the fact that all of the religions of the book originated in a very inhospitable part of the globe, this gave them a view of a deity as being cruel, punishing, and anti-life. Consequently, they frown on sex, especially for recreation. You, Christine writes, are the only voice on the radio that understands that these men are afraid of women's power. They've always been afraid, which is why they try so hard to control us. We have the babies. We women always know that our children are our own. Men are sometimes unsure of this. With the advent of private property and their desire to pass on their property to their so-called own, it became more important for men to feel assured of this. And so they keep trying to control us. One proof of their jealousy of our power is the unrelenting, massively expensive scientific efforts to reproduce life in a Petri dish. I'll end on a humorous note with something that Gloria Steinem said, quote, if men had babies, abortion would be a sacrament, end quote. Keep it lit, Mike. Peace and love, Christine in West Hollywood. Well, thank you, Christine. Yeah, she makes a very important part here that I don't want to slide by. The three religions of the book, as she pointed out, originated in a very inhospitable part of the globe. And this gave the people who invented these religions a very cruel, punishing, anti-life kind of deity. And by contrast, if you take a look at Wicca, or religions of more hospitable climes, you will find that these religions or belief systems tend to be life-affirming, earth-centered, not hell and, you know, some place up there, but earth-centered, nurturing, loving kind of religion. I've said on this program many times, all religions suck. Not true. Not completely. There are a couple. Wicca is one of them. Malloy endorses witchcraft on his program! Wicca is one of them. Some of the Far Eastern religions, while they do have a cruel streak embedded in some of their deities, that cruelty seems more for sport than for punishment. And, of course, that makes it even worse, I guess. But if you're really looking for a spiritual base, and a lot of people do, a lot of people do, I don't recommend religion at all. I recommend you use your own power to balance yourself in relation to the rest of your environment. But if someone were to approach me and say, hey, Malloy, I've got to have a religion. You got any ideas? I would point you in the direction of Wicca. I really would. Or one of the old European or African religions. And I realize that it has to be a certain part of Africa. It can't be the desert north. It has to be the lush, producing, life-affirming. That's the way it began, anyway. Central part of the continent of Africa. Africa has been brutalized politically by colonialism and then the rise of the warlords and death and destruction and disease. Yes, of course. So maybe you want to stay away from that. But you got to get back prior to that history. And there's violence in those tribal religions also. But you can check it out. One thing you know for damn sure, if you've been paying attention in your own life, that the three religions of the book seriously and completely, totally hate women.
And brothers, 'cause if you do, you can hear their voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying.
I went out and got myself a paper.
Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly
21 past the hour. From the war. So, an ultimate example, or a perfect example, or a hideous example of this white man war on all women is what is happening now in Texas. Texas loses its entire women's health program, the state part of it, over a Planned Parenthood law. Now, the Texas legislators who passed this law and Rick Perry, who signed it, understood fully what they were doing. So let's not get into any of this, from their standpoint anyway, ignorance of what the federal law mandated, or let's not shift any blame to the Obama administration, other than the overarching reality that the Obama administration should have pushed for single payer. So should the Democratic Party should have done that also when they had the majority in Congress. But they didn't. So anyway, here we are. But the Department of Health and Human Services, Federal Department of Health and Human Services, announced back on Thursday, it's going to cut off all Medicaid funding, all Medicaid funding. And as soon as you see the word Medicaid, you know who that's going to affect. The HHS are going to cut off all Medicaid funding for family planning to the state of Texas. This follows Governor Rick Perry's decision to implement a new law that excludes Planned Parenthood from the state's Medicaid women's health program. Now, remember what Planned Parenthood does. Pap smears, breast exams, contraception, counseling, just on and on. Women's health issues, cervical cancer. Well, that's a pap smear. Just all sorts of woman's work, right? But Planned Parenthood has, to the degree that's really pissed off these white men, it's excluded the presence, the political presence, of white male-dominated political systems up until now. Cindy Mann, this is according to Huffington Post, Cindy Mann, who's the director of the Center for Medicaid and State Operations, that's a federal organization, wrote to Texas health officials a letter back on Thursday explaining that the state broke federal Medicaid rules, broke the law, by discriminating against a qualified family planning provider, Planned Parenthood, and thus would be losing the entire program, which, as I mentioned, covers cancer screenings, contraceptives, basic health care, to 130,000 low-income women each year in Texas. Those women now will have no access, thanks to Rick Perry, white man, and the white man-dominated Texas legislature. And one has to assume that the white man-dominated Texas legislature and the white Governor Rick Perry understand what they did when they passed and signed this into law. Cindy Mann, the director of the Center for Medicaid and State Operations, wrote, quote, "We very much regret the state's decision to implement this rule, the state of Texas, which will prevent women enrolled in the program from receiving services from the trusted health care providers they have chosen and relied upon for their care." She went on, "In light of Texas's actions, CMS, Center for Medicaid and State Operations, is not in a position to extend or renew the current Medicaid contract." Now, the thing about this, this is a part where if you have any doubt as to whether or not this is an overt, above-the-table, religious war on women, then consider this. The federal government pays for nearly 90% of the state of Texas's $40 million women's health program, and nearly half of the program's providers in Texas are Planned Parenthood clinics. The federal government pays for 90%. So this is not a budget idea in Texas. This is a war on woman, flat out, full bore, straight ahead, white man, religious right, we're going to get you bitches attitude. That's it. Now, the new law that went into effect earlier this month disqualified Planned Parenthood from participating in the program because some of its clinics provide abortions, even though no state, no federal money can be used to pay for those abortions. So where's the money come from if a woman seeks a pregnancy termination and goes to Planned Parenthood? From her own damn pocket. Fascism? Fascism? War on women? Religious insanity? White man-dominated invasion of the privacy of a woman? You kidding me?
Doing talk radio right from the left. It's Mike Malone.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour has been sponsored, as all three have been tonight, by Richard Bach. Richard writes, no, this is not a Bill Maher million-dollar contribution to a super PAC, but this is doing my small part to keep the Mike Malloy Show on the air. This is also in remembrance of my mother, Jane, who at a young age of 55 lost her fight to cancer 7 years ago today. I miss you, Mom. P.S. Been an avid listener since Nova M days and a day one podcast subscriber. Signed, Richard Bach. Now, it couldn't be the same Richard Bach who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull, but it's an interesting name. Thank you, Richard. Appreciate it. All night. Thank you. Back to the situation in Texas where Rick Perry, the white governor, white male governor, and the white male-dominated legislature of Texas has decided to violate the law, and in response, where it concerns women's health services, and in response to that violation, because of the way the Medicaid law is written, the federal law, the federal government has no choice unless it wants to be a co-conspirator in damning women to no health care in Texas. It has no choice but to stop funding the Medicaid-funded operations in Texas where it concerns women's health. I wonder what's next. Medicaid funds a lot more than women's health. I wonder what the white man Rick Perry and the white male-dominated Texas legislature is going to decide to chop to pieces next. Anything has to do with women, just let's see what's next on their list. According to Medicaid law, according to Cindy Mann, who's the director of the Center for Medicaid and State Operations, according to the law, a state cannot restrict women's ability to choose a provider simply because that provider offers separate services, in this case abortion, that aren't even paid for by the Medicaid program. You see, no state or federal tax dollars, as far as these religious bigot bastards are concerned, not a penny goes for abortion provisions. So what are you left with? A war on women. It's very simple. Very simple. Very self-definitive, very self-explanatory. The white man, Texas Governor Perry, wrote a letter to Obama earlier this month accusing the Obama administration of, quote, now get this, mandating which health providers the state of Texas must use, end quote, in order to, quote, continue to support abortion providers like Planned Parenthood, end quote. Now, you can pick that apart like a bird picking over a piece of carrion, but the lies and distortions in that simple sentence are beyond belief. White man, Texas Governor Perry, knows damn good well when he wrote the letter to black man, President Obama, what he, white man, and yes, I'm putting this in race and gender terms. Of course I am. We know what's going on here. Come on. Come on. If you right-wingers want to stuff your index finger up your nose and pick a booger and say, what's he talking about now? Go ahead. But sane people know what we're talking about here. Perry vowed to continue the women's health program in Texas without Planned Parenthood and without federal money. But, of course, he hasn't put out any plan how that's going to happen. And in the meantime, you women in Texas who had a pap smear scheduled for next week, cancel it. A spokesperson for the Health and Human Services said yesterday that this was not Obama's decision and that the administration's hands are tied on the issue. The spokesperson said, quote, Medicaid law is very clear. A state may not restrict patients' choice of providers of services like mammograms and other cancer screenings if those providers are qualified to deliver care covered by Medicaid. The statement went on, patients, not state government officials, patients should be able to choose the doctors and other health care providers that are best for them and their families. In 2005, Texas requested the same authority to restrict patients' choices, and the Bush administration did not grant it to them either. End quote. So, Rick Perry, this horse's ass, white male, Southern Republican governor of Texas, and the white male dominated legislature of Texas has decided that 130,000, as it stands now, women who go to Planned Parenthood for essential female health care services can go to hell or, I don't know, go where? Cross the border, go to Oklahoma or Louisiana, you know, just go someplace. But we're not going to let these women have any kind of control. Nuh-uh. Privacy, my butt. It says in the Bible, dot, dot, dot. Don't you get tired of this? Huh? Do you? Do you get tired of this? Man. I guess it's the, I don't know, the arrogance, the hypocrisy, the this brain-dead religious nonsense, and that's where this comes from. And the thing is, all of these white men got squeezed out of women to be born, to be delivered. And I just wonder, I wonder what their mamas would think, you know? I don't know how people in the North do it. I've been in the South for so long, I forget how it was up North. But in the South, if mama's happy, the family's happy. If mama's pissed off, the whole family goes to hell. So I wonder how these mothers who squeezed out these white boys that went on to become governors and state legislators who now turn around and figuratively kick their mamas in the butt by saying, no more privacy for you women. I wonder what these women would do if they could grab Rick Perry, white man governor of Texas, or some of these other white male legislators, grab them by the ear. Not the earlobe. They get their index knuckle right inside the ear canal and their thumb right behind the ear, and I guarantee you that hurts. I wonder if Rick Perry's mother, I don't know if she's dead or alive, but I wonder if any of these mamas of some of these white boy legislatures, if they just marched into the legislature, Texas legislature, after looking at how their sons voted and grabbed them with that index knuckle in the ear canal and the thumb back there on that cartilage and just yanked the sons of bitches right out into the street and said, "Don't you dare do something like that. I didn't raise you to be a fool." You think that would work? I wonder. I was going to get to this earlier tonight, but didn't. This is last week. Kind of an interesting headline caught my attention. Rising sea levels seen as threat to coastal U.S. There's a place in the Florida Panhandle. Two places, Cape San Blas and St. George's Island. A lot of people in the East are familiar with these two areas. St. George's Island is a barrier island, and it's you know, it's got homes on it. No big ass commercial development. There's no franchise anything out there, I don't think. And they have some building codes that restrict buildings, I guess, to three stories, maybe two. But I discovered it through a friend about 35 years ago. And it's just, it's to me, that's the only part of Florida that's really Florida. The rest of it has been so overbuilt and commercialized and polluted and destroyed and burned and misused and abused. But that Panhandle area, where Joe Scarborough is from, actually, and then Cape San Blas, which is a little bit further to the west, along the Panhandle, same way. Cape San Blas National Seashore is something to see. Something to see. And I took my now almost 35-year-old son down there. I've taken my daughters, who are in their early 40s. I've taken grandchildren there. And I've taken Molly. And, you know, it's a place where we would take a summer break, go rent a house for a week, get everybody down. You know, you've done that, I'm sure. But it occurred to me the other day that when Molly is 40 years old, those beaches are going to be gone. I'm relatively sure that the erosion at Cape San Blas is already just unbelievable as the seawater rises. And we can all make an argument about not building that close to the shore. Okay. I'm just saying. As the global warming continues and sea levels do rise, and there's nothing these right-wing devils can say to make that stop. There's nobody they can pray to. There's nobody they can blame except themselves, all of us. And, you know, eventually St. George's Island will just be nothing. It'll be a mark on a map. And I think about it sometimes, and so we take a lot of photos, a lot of videos, and we take the kids down there, especially Molly, so that someday she can look back and say, "Wow, there was really a beach there?"
Swaggering a step, I'm quick to smile, and I'll never forget, because I'm from Texas. Well, I like to fish, and I love to hunt. I'm a practical joker, and I love a good stunt. I'm from Texas, thought you ought to know. I'm from Texas.
10 before the hour. And this hour, as the entire night has been sponsored by Richard Bach in L.A. Thank you, Richard. His message, it's not a Bill Maher million-dollar contribution to a super PAC, but this is doing my small part to keep the Mike Molloy Show on the air. This is also in remembrance of my mother, Jane, who at a young age of 55 lost her fight to cancer 7 years ago today. I miss you, Mom. P.S. I've been an avid listener since Nova M days and a day one podcast subscriber, Richard. Thank you, Richard. Thank you very much. So anyway, about 3.7 million Americans live within a few feet of high tide and are now risk being hit by more frequent coastal flooding in coming decades. Ooh, decades! Oh, hell, I don't have to worry about that. And that's because of the sea level rise caused by global warming that doesn't exist. These are all science lies. You know, as opposed to biblical truth. These are science lies. This is according to new science research. And as anybody will tell you who's an evangelical whatever or conservative whatever, science lies. It's just a liberal plot. It's all lies. It's lies. If the pace of the rise accelerates, according to the New York Times, as much as expected, coastal flooding at levels that were once exceedingly rare could become an every few years occurrence by 2050. Now, what is it? This is 2012. Hell, 38 years from now. Dang, I don't have to worry about that. You probably don't, Mr. White Man Right Winger. You probably don't. And that's just coastal flooding. But once the sea level rises to a certain point and stays there, then what? And according to the Times, the most vulnerable state is Florida. Well, duh. With roughly half of the nation's at-risk population living there, living near the coast on the porous, low-lying limestone shelf. Limestone? What's that? Now, see, he's getting all science-y on us. Is there anything in there but in the Bible about that? Maud? Limestone? Low-lying limestone shelf that constitutes much of that state. That's what Florida sits on. Florida really shouldn't be there. It's just a Pinae Insula. Remember your Latin? Louisiana, California, New York, and New Jersey are also particularly vulnerable. Uh-oh. Researchers found, and virtually the entire American coastline is at some degree of risk. According to an author with other scientists, his name is Benjamin Strauss, two new papers outline the research. He says, quote, sea level rise is like an invisible tsunami, building force while we do almost nothing. We have a closing window of time to prevent the worst by preparing for higher seas. Now, notice what he's saying there. By preparing for higher seas. You see, folks, this is a done deal. It's a done deal. We have been warned for the past 40 years. And we have not only ignored the warnings, but we've gone the reverse direction. Instead of energy conservation, it's been energy waste. Instead of focusing on how to get control of an issue that eventually will seriously, if not wipe out every species on Earth, certainly decimate the ones that are here now. But no. Hey, it's not in the Bible. This is just science crap. Don't pay attention to it. Just science crap. But listen to what the scientist said. We have a closing window of time to prevent the worst by preparing for higher seas. It's that last phrase, by preparing for higher seas. Not doing something to stop it, but by preparing for it because it's already here. Now, this paper, the project on sea level rise led by Dr. Strauss, it was for the nonprofit organization Climate Central. It appears to be the most elaborate effort in decades to estimate the proportion of the national population at risk from rising seas. But you see, this is more garbage. This is just science garbage. There's no truth in here. This is just these damn liberal scientists. I don't know what they're trying to do. God has everything under control. These scientists don't know what they're talking about. If God didn't want the sea level to rise, it wouldn't rise. The papers are scheduled for publication the day after tomorrow. Or was this from last week? No, they were published last Wednesday by the journal Environmental Research Letters. You can find it online, Environmental Research Letters. And the work is based on the 2010 census and on improved estimates compiled by federal agencies of the land elevation near coastlines and of tidal levels throughout the country. Tidal levels? That more of that science, right? God takes care of the tide. Don't worry about the tide. Okay. Okay. Climate Central, by the way, of Princeton, New Jersey, was started about 4 years ago by foundation money to conduct original climate research and able to inform the public about the work of other scientists. So you can see right there, if it's the, you know, it's supposed to inform the public about the work of other scientists, and it's run by scientists, well, that's a damn conspiracy, isn't it? Huh? Scientists? And run by other scientists, and the scientists talk together, and then they dump this garbage out on us? What are you talking about? This is the madness that we live with right now. Look at the madness in Texas. Look at the madness where a scientific paper is developed by people who understand the science. And the bobbleheads in this country, the religious freaks who, getting to the point where it's just about everybody, just kind of sit there and go, no, that's not in the Bible. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.